Hey, everybody. Welcome back to One Club Shorts podcast. It's been a while. I mean, we took a little bit of a winter break. We've got a lot of stuff going on and thought that the downtime was the right time to do it as golf starts to just start to pick up again. But we've got a lot to catch up on. I mean, more than anything else, we're gonna hit on the Genesis from the weekend. We're going to talk about some LIV golf. We're going to talk about the, obviously Michigan's victory. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl and some of the highlights. And then for us football geeks, we've got the NFL draft coming up. So we can hit on a little bit of what we're hoping our teams do in the future and how they, they all need to be restructured. I think, unfortunately for me as a Giants fan, we're still in the, we're rebuilding stage for the last 20 years. but yeah, so we'll hit on all that stuff. But, you know, we debated on where to start. And I guess, for us, let's get right back into golf. We had a really good, fun weekend in golf. And there's a lot of news that came out of the weekend. So let's just start there and kind of see where it goes.
So we got what I think we have to call to this point the round of the year on the PGA Tour from Hideki Matsuyama on Sunday at the Genesis, going 9 under par. I think he was 5 shots better than the third round, the third best round of the day. So Adam Hadwin was 6 under. He was the only other player on the course better than 4 under on Sunday, which is remarkable to go out and just blitz the field by that much. And, guys were starting the day at 12 under par. And there's Matsuyama sitting at 8. Goes to get a 3-shot win. That's crazy. So, Craig, I have a feeling I know what you were rooting for on Sunday afternoon. I have a feeling it's probably the same thing that I was rooting for. And I'm talking about Will Zalatoris. But at some point, we just got to appreciate what an incredible round that was by a major champion who we haven't heard a ton from super recently, kind of reminding us just how good he is against the best players in the world.
And he almost missed his tee time.
That's true.
I mean, he came out of somewhere hot. I mean, run into that first tee box where I've done that. Glenn's done that. I've known, just get stuck in traffic and whatever. I don't know where he was. I don't know if anyone ever got to the bottom of that. But, he played awesome. I mean, it's so hard to root against him, even if the person that you're dying to get a win is that close. But he's such a likable guy, such a great golfer, and his caddy's phenomenal just as far as how much he cares. It's so hard to root against him, and what a rounder. It's insane. But with that said, Willie Z, I mean, it was so close. He played so well. I mean, if he is like that now and he's just kind of getting back into the groove of real competitive golf, this has to be his year. I mean, this is the year he comes away with a major. This is the year that he ends up in the top 10. If his putting is where it needs to be, anywhere, if it's 50% better than what it was before he got hurt, he's going to go lights out this year. Got it. Love the guy.
So here's what we got to watch from Will Zalatoris. He comes back from his, many injuries on December 3rd, 2023, plays in the Hero. He loses the Hero by a billion. He shoots 11 over par. The next worst guy is 2 over par. So things are not looking good. He goes out to the Sony Open, has basically just as bad a showing, gets cut. Next 3 tournaments, T34 at the American Express, T13 at the Farmers, T2 at the Genesis. And the thing that we all know we got to watch with Willie Z is the putting. And positive strokes gained putting for Will Zalatoris in 3 straight tournaments, with the strokes gained value increasing each time. So it was 0.3, then it was 0.7. This week it was almost 0.8. Our guy is coming on strong. And he also had a better ball striking week, his best driving week, and his best approach week since being back on tour. Glenn, what did you see from him with the putter? I don't want to take away from what Matsuyama did, but I know what we were all watching for. What did you see from him with the putter. How has he been able to turn that part of his game around?
Well, what I saw was what I predicted last year. Not to toot my own horn again,
but now you're on a roll with these.
Not only did I say Will Zalatoris would come back with a broomstick putter, but I said he'd have the Lab Mez putter, which yep. he had. And I said that was the only thing that could save. The guy tee to green is as good as there is. And, you know, that putting stroke where he would take it back, then it would come in towards his body, back out, and then he'd stroke through. I was like, boy, you can't do that. So we knew that he was going to do it, and it's just that's it. I mean, just like, you know, Lucas Glover went to that putter. Good ball striker went to that putter. There's something about that putter, which now I have my eyes on eBay looking for one, because I'm going to have to give it a shot because it does – there's something to that, and I think it's because it's so upright, right? You can go right to the edge of the rules so that you're almost standing directly over the ball and just moving it back and through. Even though you're not locked down, you're just all you have to do is rock it, and the thing just stays online. So I think that's it. All he needed was the broomstick putter, which is the one thing that everybody said, oh, that's cheating. Not cheating, as long as it's within the rules, but it changed his game around.
Yeah, I think I saw a post. I wish I remember who put it on Twitter. It was just a screenshot of his putter behind the ball with, you know, basically straight up and down. Like you said, I think the caption was like, lie angle is overrated.
Yeah.
I think they might be onto something.
No, yeah, he's probably right at 79.5, which I think 79.9 degrees is the max that you can go, which isn't quite 90 degrees, right? But it's only 10 degrees short of 90 degrees. So you are basically just taking the straight back and straight through at that point. You can always just have the heel up, and then the shaft is perpendicular. Now all you have to do is just right through. And then, I mean, it's the easiest stroke that you can have, right?
You know, it's funny, though, because it comes back to – I have this argument with some guys all the time where they're like, you know, there's a proper way to swing and there's a proper way to do this. Golf's a funny sport where it's whatever works for you, right? At the end of the day, like, you don't, we all wish we could swing like Tiger in his prime, but at the end of the day, I can't, I never will be able to have that swing or that, you know, that fluid motion. It's just not in my DNA. So you do what works for you and you do what kind of, you know, at the end of the day, gets you through a scrappy round. If that's what works for him putting wise, and that was the difference, who cares what anyone else says? All the naysayers can just go pound sand at the end of the day. Cause it's just get your money, get your rankings, get, you know, I don't care how you did, kick it with your foot if it was legal, but just, you know, do whatever works.
To be clear, don't kick it with your foot. Like
if it was legal, maybe that was a Dude Perfect video. I don't know.
Did you see that guy on the KFT tour shot 57? His swing was his crystal ball. I mean, it looked like a modified Jim Furyk. I mean, it was crazy. But dude shot 57.
So I saw some interesting commentary about that too, which was you reach a certain level of skill in golf, at which point swing your swing is the best advice you can get.
Absolutely.
For a lot of us, swinging our swing is like terrible, and we're reinforcing really bad habits, and it's something I worry about with myself a lot when I play golf. So I mean, maybe this is a question for both of you, maybe this is a question for Glenn. I think you might think a little more about these things. How do you strike the balance of I know how to get the ball around the course playing the way I do, even if I have some bad habits, some bad tendencies, even if I'm not optimizing the results that I can get, and hey, I need to make a change here. When do you know that something is so far gone that you need to make a change?
Well, most of the time, once you get to a certain level, it's small little tweaks, right? So, you know, if you look at my swing, it's different than Craig's. It's different. You know, we do have our own swing. So the question is, like, you can take someone like me or Craig and teach us, you know, the fundamentals. Like, you can see a good teacher can see, hey, you're coming across the ball or, you know, your ball position's off. I don't know how you look at a swing like Cristobal's or Jim Furyk's and go, oh, no, you got it now, man. This is it. You got it. You know, all that matters is that, you know, that little 1 foot straight line where the club's coming in, hitting the ball and leaving, you know, and exiting. That's all that matters, how you get there. Like, we try to simplify our swings, Craig and I, these guys have such complex swings, but then for some reason they can repeat it, and that's all that matters, right? Just repeating the contact, that's all that matters. So, you know, it's easy to take a decent athlete or someone who's good, and you can see what they have to do. And, you know, you can see when they're just too upright and they're not rotary enough. But I don't know how you teach these guys. I don't know. I mean, did that guy ever have a lesson, you know, but Jim Furyk is, you know, his dad taught him, or, you know, Matt Wolf's teacher, like there's they have a different eye that I guess they like, I don't know why your body's doing this, but I would just stay with it because it's working. And then you just do little tweaks.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you got Bubba Watson in that group as well. You know, guy has legitimately never had a lesson and goes out, you know, wins the Masters multiple times. It's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I was watching an interview with Tommy Fleetwood, and he was saying, you know, so they were talking about his swing, and they were talking about like the three quarter finish. And he's like, well, I just kind of did that when I started. I feel like I was losing my swing, and I got that to kind of stay connected and have more control. And then I was like, wow, this really works. So now he uses it for everything all the time. It already, like, he knows how to do that. And you just adapt to what's working, right? And then eventually, if you lose it, you got to tweak it then. But I don't know. Golf's very much a game of, you know, if it ain't broken, don't try and fix too much. Because, man, you can get down a rabbit hole, and it's so hard to figure out. I did that with my drive 1 year, and I was driving well for the first couple months. And then all of a sudden I started to tweak it because I wanted to get more distance, and I lost. I couldn't hit that club for the next 4 months at all. I mean, I did every time I try to fix it, I couldn't get it back to where I was to start. And every time I try to fix it, I made it worse. You just got to be careful. And those guys that are I play for $10 on the weekends. Those guys that are playing for millions of dollars, man, it's a dangerous thing to try and tweak too much unless it's absolutely needed.
Yeah, I think we've all been in that place. And I mean, you know, pros are not immune to this either. I think, you know, Padraig Harrington was very famously in this place where you're tinkering, you're trying to get better, and you completely blow something up. Happened to me a couple of years ago. I remember I spent basically an entire winter after I blew things up and got mad about it, trying to like reteach myself where I wanted the club to be at impact and the direction I wanted it to be moving. And it was brutal. Like I'm in there almost missing the ball. It feels so unnatural, just trying to get back to what I was doing. So yeah, it's crazy how you can be on the razor's edge there.
Yeah. That's usually a cause from the chase of distance, right? You think like Ian Baker, Ian Baker Finch was on top of the world, and then he chased distance. He never heard from him again. You know, he wins the British Open, and you know, then he couldn't hit the first fairway at St. Andrews, which is the world's widest fairway. You know, Michelle,
now,
what's that?
In fairness, Glenn, I don't know if you've played the old course, but okay, so you may relate to me on this. I played there like 10 years ago, longer. Holy cow. Like 12 years ago, and I had never been more nervous than I was standing up on that first tee. And in that moment, how he managed to miss that fairway was abundantly clear to me.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what, man?
He did this a lot.
That's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
Left. Like that is 200 yards over left. That was a 200 yard miss.
That's fair.
Did I ever tell you my St. Andrews story?
No.
So after the 92 Olympics, I graduated college, went up there with a couple of buddies, and we played. And we entered the lottery the night before. We got a tee time. It was awesome. We get there, and then we have security with us. And we're like, well, what the hell's going on here? Prince Andrew was playing behind us. So he's like, I'm here to make sure that you don't hold up to Prince. So we had a great day. The guy was actually a lot of fun. And we get to 18, and one of my buddies, Ted, slices a ball, hits a car on the road there, goes bang, and comes back into play. And then the security guard just goes, good luck with your litigation. I'm out of here. And then he went back to be with the Prince. But so word got out that day that Prince Andrew was playing. So we come up 18. There's probably 250, 300 people around the green. And I remember I lipped out like a 20-foot birdie putt, and all these people went, oh! And I'm like, I got to like do the drum. Like, oh, come on. That was my St. Andrew's moment of glory.
That's awesome. I love that. What a great place. That's got to be. I saw there was some discourse going on. I guess Golf Digest had ranked Royal County down the number one course in the world. And then again, I'm sorry to whoever made the documentary, but someone was talking about the documentary they had made about golf in that area and about County Down. And I was thinking, people think there's a better place in the world to play golf than St. Andrews. Like, I was just baffled. I understand it's not, if you, you know, took it out of St. Andrews and just put it in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
you wouldn't say this is the greatest golf course I've ever played, but I can't imagine a better golf experience. And maybe I need to distinguish those a little better, but yeah, that was my reaction.
No, I agree. Cause like if you think of County Down, right, the topography is totally different. It's hilly, yep, course, dramatic, and you're, you know, but St. Andrews teeing off and coming into the town, there's nothing better than that.
Unreal. Mm-hmm. On the topic of people who have won at St. Andrews, we saw Tiger for like 25 holes this week. They weren't all that impressive. He had a very humanizing shank at the end of his first round before withdrawing with the flu in the middle of his second round. Craig, how much of Tiger are you expecting to see between now and Augusta? Because I find that I'm always on this roller coaster with him where when he plays in an event like the Genesis, I'm like, hell yeah, we got Tiger back. This is awesome. It has me so amped up about the state of professional golf. And then he withdraws or he plays badly, or, you know, the next Wednesday it comes out that he's hurting and he's going to skip a few tournaments or whatever. Like, I feel like we're probably only seeing him at the Players if we're lucky before Augusta. Are you any more optimistic than I am, Craig?
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm optimistic only in the sense that, you know, they're still saying the real reason he dropped out, even though his back was a little tight and everything else, was just the flu or whatever, you know, whatever he had. So for me, that's great. His body's holding up. He didn't seem to be walking with a noticeable limp like he was last year. So, you know, if he can, if his body is staying healthy, you know, I don't think we're going to get a full season out of him, but no. I think we'll get more sporadic tournaments than we did in the last couple, only because I think he feels like he needs to get back out there in a lot of ways. He's got a brand new clothing line. He's got his new logo out there. He's trying to do a whole bunch of things, you know, outside of the golf world, you know, to keep interesting. So he, not that he's ever not going to be relevant, but I think he is probably thinking that, you know, the more I'm out there playing, the better off all this stuff does, you know? So I don't know. I do think he's going to play more than we've seen in the last couple of years, until there's something in, you know, physically that starts ailing him. Cause you know, he's itching to be out there, right? You know, he feels like he's competitive again. So I'm still excited about it.
Can we talk about, I think what you're saying makes sense. Can we talk about the clothing brand for a second? Sunday Red. Why is it three words?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah. I want to know, did they still remember, Craig, you're old enough, remember that clothing line, Le Tigre?
Le Tigre, yeah.
80s. Didn't he kind of steal that logo? Isn't it the same logo, only the Tiger's going in the wrong other direction?
It's close. There's got to be some hidden semblance. I don't know if they're saying that the amount of stripes are how many majors he's won or something. I don't know. You've heard all these different rumors and different things, but it's close.
It's like almost the exact logo, only it's going a different direction. Look at Le Tigre in 1980s, and then you look at the logo. It's exact. It's just going the other way. It's got a little bit more detail in it, but.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows modern day Tigers go the other way anyway.
I'm really hung up on this three words thing, though, because now it's like it's not referring to Sunday, but Sunday Red, wearing red on Sunday, the day, is like the thing.
Did Nike like copyright Sunday Red? I wonder if there's some sort
of... I guess they must. It must be something like that.
Yeah, it's got to have meaning. Like, everything that is part of this has some kind of meaning. He's got to figure out what it is. He hasn't really disclosed much about it, right? Like,
yeah.
But I think somebody asked him about the TW, mm-hmm. about keeping that logo, yeah. and he said, no, it's time to move on. Whatever. I'm psyched he's back out there doing stuff. It's better for the game when he's involved in any way, shape, or form. So,
for sure.
Well, who do you think had a worse week at Genesis? Tiger, In-N-Out Burger, or the men's locker room at Riviera?
I think we all know the answer there.
All got beat up. You thought we're playing Mexico this week, right? Not last week. It was just stomach problems galore. Spieth, I think Matsuyama had it. Kim had it. Tiger had it. And they were blaming In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, they kept showing that one guy. I don't even know if he worked for In-N-Out. He just kept showing this one guy. he looked like a culprit, but
okay, we gotta talk about Spieth, because it's possible that the In-N-Out Burger is what ultimately led to him being disqualified, because it led him to leaving the scoring area. Yeah. It's ridiculous that we're still signing scorecards in the year of our Lord 2024, right? Like, this is, I'm not talking about your club championship or your mid-am even or anything like that. This is the PGA Tour. This is the pinnacle, we are led to believe, of professional golf. They have cameras on every single shot played in almost every single tournament. That's what ShotLink is. And we can't have some arm of the PGA Tour responsible for scoring. Why? Like, it doesn't make a lick of sense to me. And I know people say, oh, well, part of it is about, like, you're the ultimate holder of your score, and even if it was done automatically, you'd still want to verify it and this and that. Dude, that we're disqualifying one of the 15 players on this tour that people want to watch when he's in contention because he had to go to the bathroom too badly to check his scorecard with the level of scrutiny that he needed to. This is insane. Like, we got to do something about this. We can't be disqualifying people for this anymore. We are too advanced as a society. We sent someone to the moon 60 years ago. Allegedly. Like, what are we doing?
Allegedly,
we sent someone to them.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think it's crazy. It's one of those dinosaur rules that just, it doesn't make much sense anymore. And it doesn't affect the game, except negatively sometimes, you know, like, there's such a better way to do it. It's not like they have the quarterbacks from each football team have to remember the score without a digital scoreboard in front of them, right? It's like, you know, oh, hey, we won the Super Bowl. No, no, you didn't. You miscounted. No, it's dumb. It's got to change, because it's the more that this stuff kind of stuff happens, it just drives fans away, right? Every Jordan Spieth fan after that moment was like, well, whatever, I'm done, right? You already lost Tiger. Now Spieth, you know, is out. Like, just, it's so silly.
It's the dumbest rule in all sports, right? Because we're out there. We're even measuring every shot to the inch.
Yeah.
And every shot is recorded. And there's a walking scorer that relays the score for every hole into the live scoreboard. There's a standard bearer that's sitting there. If you're like, well, the player is the ultimate responsible for his score card. No, he's not. His playing partner has control of his scorecard. If his playing partner is a psycho, he can mess it up. And, like, was it Michael Kim who had a scorecard? Mm-hmm. Said, like, he didn't even write down any of his scores. He had to go back with his caddy and try to figure out what he had, because he just forgot to write down the scores.
It's like, and it's a gotcha. Yeah, it's a total gotcha. How do they know he signed an incorrect scorecard? Well, they know it because they know what score he shot.
That's a good point.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, they already know what's right.
Score, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the fact that it's not live, like, real-time scoring somewhere, you know, across, it's just is silly. I mean, I know on TV they have it, but across the, you know, all the spectators are at these events, you should be able to see what everyone's shooting from hole to hole to hole, just something, right? It's just
the ShotLink. ShotLink has every every single shot recorded on the golf course to the inch.
Doesn't make sense.
Completely ridiculous. I'm glad we agree on that. I was really worried one of you was going to disagree for the sake of the argument, and that was going to be like one of the more frustrating experiences I've had in the 61 episode history of this podcast. I wasn't going to be happy about it. So thank you.
You should let us know, because I'm happy to come up with arguments.
Yeah. No, I know. That's why I told you on the backside. All right. So before we get into college football, Super Bowl, college basketball, all manner of other things we're going to talk about, we're, you know, a few tournaments, a solid five or six tournaments, whatever it's been, maybe seven now, into maybe eight, into the PGA Tour season in 2024. We've had exciting tournaments with exciting winners, like the Genesis. We've had tournaments that maybe we had higher hopes for that end up being won by Matthew Pavon, like the Farmers. And what I want to do is get your guys' takes on five predictions I'm going to ask you to make for this year. And we'll come back and we'll revisit these after the Tour Championship. And we'll see which one of you was closer to being right about more stuff. And Craig, I'm sorry to put you in a position like this, because we know that Glenn doesn't miss with these predictions, but this is your chance. You want to be on top. You got to go after the king.
So you want me to come up with five right off the top of my head? Why don't we rotate?
I have questions. I have questions for you.
You're gonna
answer them. First question.
True.
Craig, I'll go to you first. They're gonna play this year. They're gonna play four major championships in men's golf. I don't know if you guys knew that, but it's gonna be four this year. How many first-time major winners will we have?
Two.
Okay. Glenn?
I'm going to go three because of the LIV.
Wow.
Remember, if you go over, I automatically win.
That's not true.
That's the Price is Right, bro.
we're not playing the Price is Right, Craig. No. Craig, do you want to call any of your shots? I'll give you a ridiculous number of bonus points if you can get any first-time major winners correct.
Willie Z.
Okay. Glenn, you want to call your shot?
Cameron Young.
So Xander, Hovland, and Cantlay all stay on the board?
Yeah, they don't have the guts.
All right. Okay. I'm just thinking about the percentage play. This one's going to be tough to score, but I just want to get a hot take out of each of you. Rory McIlroy is more likely to A, win the FedEx Cup, or B, not qualify for the Tour Championship.
Win the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, he's not gonna win the FedEx Cup, but he's gonna make the playoffs.
Okay.
He'll make the Tour Championship.
All right. I was hoping I'd get a hotter take in there. We were talking about long putters, anchored putters earlier. We're talking about scorecard rule. The next major rule change in professional golf will be what? I'm thinking about
breakfast ball off the first.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I hope so.
Write it down.
I like that. I'm with you on that one. Next major.
Thinking about stuff on the order of. You can put the flag in, things of that nature.
Can we go back to that foam thing in the cup where you just have to slam the ball off?
That's a great one, the pool noodle.
Yeah, they just randomly bring back all the COVID rules.
They decide golf isn't exciting enough. They gotta do something about scoring. Every scoring record gets broken. Anyone want to make a real prediction there or no?
The next one, it's not going to happen soon. At some point, divots in the fairway are going to become too big of an issue. I know it brings up like a judgment call, like what constitutes a divot, but why you can have ground under repair. you know, 10 feet off the fairway, but not, you know, a divot, which is clearly ground under repair, and you have to play the ball where it lies.
Craig, you want to make a real guess, or you just want to stick with 2 foot gimmies, breakfast balls, all the Craig Schneider rules? They're basically your prediction is you are going to become like the lead rules official for the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they don't start adapting to my rules, why should I have to obey their rules? That's how I
you don't.
I still like your this thing.
Your lowest 18 hole score this year will be what?
77.
Craig, you're going to be like on pace to shoot 75 one day, and you're going to four putt the last hole just to make that correct.
Me?
Yep.
I will shoot in the 60s. I will shoot a 69.
Love that.
How many holes?
23.
Huh. That'd be something special.
I will buy Glenn drinks all night. Drinks of his choice all night if he shoots in the 60s this year.
All right.
That's Craig not said about how it to buy.
Which light is my liver on? I got to start massaging
it. There you go.
Is this one? Where is it?
You're going to take him out to like a 4,300 yard course. Shoot 65.
Exactly, yeah.
Last question, and then we got a tiebreaker March Madness style. Right now the number one player in the world according to Data Golf is Scottie Scheffler. After the Tour Championship, the number one player in the world according to Data Golf, which includes the LIV guys, so not OWGR, Data Golf, will be who?
Number one.
Huh.
Who's going to be the best player on the planet this fall? As of this fall.
I was going to bore you to death and say Scottie Scheffler is not going to give it up.
Probably not a bad answer, honestly.
But are you saying we have to make a switch?
No, you don't have to make a switch.
I'm going to say Scottie Scheffler. If I was putting money on it.
Yeah.
Who would I love to see up there? Max Homa. I don't think he's going to do it.
That would be something special. He's in the top 12. He's
He's playing great. But to take over that lead,
it'd take a special season.
I'm going to go with Patrick Cantlay. He's just always up there. He doesn't win a ton, but he's a top 5 machine.
Is Patrick Cantlay today's Luke Donald? Is that what you're saying? Remember when he was number 1 in the world without winning like anything?
Not as handsome. Luke Donald's a good-looking man.
Not as handsome. That's true. Hasn't captained as many Ryder Cup-winning teams either.
That's true. Yeah, I'll go with Cantlay.
Tiebreaker question. This is like when you have to predict the score of the championship game in your March Madness bracket. Tiger will play how many holes of major championship golf this year?
Oh, that's a good one.
If he played every hole of every major, that would be 288, Craig, if that's what you're trying to figure out right now.
For the 4 days, it'd be 228, is that what you said?
288. 72 times 4.
I think he's going to play
Here's a hint.
I think he's gonna. I think he's gonna play in all four majors. I think he's gonna make the cut for three of them. If I was gonna be a betting man,
Do you want to try to do that math, or do you want me to do it for
you? No. Go ahead. Knock yourself out. I don't know. I won't do that. What do I look like? An accountant? Glenn's got his pencil out.
You think he's gonna play all four and make the cut in three?
Yes.
Okay, so that's 252.
Oh, well, I am going, let's see if my math is.
Are you drawing a picture?
Is 144?
144 is he plays half the rounds, however he gets to
it. I'm even going to know he's going to play all four at the Masters. He'll make 36 holes at Pinehurst. He'll make 36 holes at the Open Championship, and he won't play the PGA.
Yeah, that's 144. Interesting. Okay.
I got real specific.
We got some good stuff on tape there. We'll see. I'm excited to come back to this. I think history will frown on Craig for taking it less seriously than he should have. And, you know, Craig's just going to be right about it's not impossible that professional golf is rigged and Glenn is in charge. And like at some point, it's too weird, right?
I should be wealthy though if I'm in charge, right? Somehow I have to make this work myself financially.
Well, you don't want to. There's you have like a second cousin placing bets on all these things, and you can't let anyone know how well you're doing. It's like, you know, people who hide their insider trading.
By the way, for Glenn's 60 round, I need to be present for it. I don't care what the track is, because I don't want to come back and hear about a whole bunch of flamingo birdies. You know what that is, Will? The one legged up. Oh, that's good. Kind of like.
Oh,
that.
Okay.
You know, from 60.
I need my man Susie to give me some putts. That's good.
You hear that from the next tee box? That was good.
Yeah. Pick it up. Let's go.
You guys have any? I know it's been winter, but if there been any good Schneider Morris battles recently? I feel like normally there's a story of like, yeah, man, I was up two with three to play and Glenn came back and then we had to settle it on the putting green. Like, I feel like that's what we get every week.
No. When's the last time we played, Glenn?
It's been a while. I don't think we played since before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I haven't picked up a club in a while, to be honest.
Weather's bad up here. Like it's been cold. It's been snowy. I guess there are a couple weekends we could have played, but I was away. But yeah, so it's been kind of a bummer of a winter. I expected to get out a couple times.
Imagine how depressed Glenn would be, but it was this cold and miserable, and I was kicking his ass in golf. It's probably for the best.
Glenn, can you imagine Craig kicking your ass in golf?
What's that? He's got a few times. He's got me a few times. I'll admit it.
I don't like it. System's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
got it, bro. That's what it's for.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I it is a beautiful thing. 100%. Watch out for Tom Kim, up to 18 in the data golf rankings. Just had to shout out my guy, Mr. Electric. Can't believe you guys didn't go with the obvious choices for first time major winners, and you didn't go with Tom Kim. That's a darn shame. And I am offended.
The year of Willie Z.
Okay.
We're back.
I could live with that. Yeah. I could live with that. Craig, way back, a while back.
Did I ever get an official apology from you?
So we recorded an episode after the Rose Bowl. We did. And I said that I was wrong and that for the first time in the history of the college football playoff, the less talented roster won both playoff games. And that's true. That's what happened.
I don't know. All I got to say is whoever's figuring out who's talented was misdiagnosing that Alabama team. That Michigan destroyed them.
Is it destroyed if you go to overtime? That's 100%. Still destroyed?
Yeah, ask Taylor Swift about the Super Bowl. Her boyfriend won. They destroyed him. Look, at the end of the day, great year for Michigan.
It was
probably not going to happen again for a long time. I'm a realist, you know. But a lot of naysayers, a lot of people thinking that they were just all show, no dough. And they showed up, man. They played great. Give those guys credit. Now, with that said, I don't necessarily know if I'm sold on McCarthy as the Giants' next quarterback.
That was going to be my next question.
It's super scary to hear that how much the Giants really like him. I don't know if that's smoke and mirrors. And I think the kid's great. I do. And you watch these highlights of him, and I think, wow, maybe I'm just wrong. I have this Zach Wilson in my head. Like, don't let him be the next Zach Wilson because he looks just like him, the same size, like all this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, God, don't. But – the kid's a winner. I mean, the kid's won everywhere he goes, from high school to IMG to Michigan. Like, the kid's just an absolute winner. He's got an awesome personality. He's got a rocket arm. He can scramble when he needs to. Maybe it's the right move. I want an offensive weapon. I want one of those receivers. I want someone that's going to actually change the face of this offense. And you can't miss, right? I don't know if he's a can't miss guy. But all the GMs are saying they're much higher on him than most of the fan base, because they just know that Michigan was inherently a running team and not a passing team. So he never really had a chance to absolutely show what he could do. I don't know.
I gotta be honest, Craig. After Michigan won the national championship, when it looked like the 49ers were going to win the Super Bowl, I was extremely, extremely concerned about having to live in a world where the two reigning champion quarterbacks were JJ McCarthy and Brock Purdy. Like, that, it just violates everything that I believed to be true about the world. And I couldn't imagine, you know, being in a situation like either of you and having kids and having to explain to my children how it's possible that we could live in a world where JJ McCarthy and Brock Purdy are the two quarterbacks winning championships. So I appreciate Patrick Mahomes for doing that, but I'm with you, Craig. I've been very surprised by the draft buzz around McCarthy. And I think if I were putting together a big board, he wouldn't just be behind Caleb and Daniels and May. I don't know how I'd rank him alongside like Penix and Nix. Like, I really don't know where he fits, but you're right. Like, what we can't tell is, were they not having him throw it because they didn't believe he could throw it, or because they didn't need him to throw it? And, you know, I don't know how these teams are going to value, you know, putting hard in-game throws on tape, which he, like, frankly, didn't really do. But I've been very surprised by how much teams seem to like him. And I'm extremely concerned that the Patriots, who I think need to be bad again if they're ever going to be good in the future, because they're far more than one piece away, will pick him, and it's just going to be Mac Jones 2.0. So, but the good news is for you, if the Patriots pick him, then the Giants are getting like Daniels or May, and you know, they'll be fine.
Look, I disagree with you on Brock Purdy. I think
that I know you do.
That kid is phenomenal, and I don't care what anybody says. That kid is absolutely phenomenal.
But you watched him play college football, right?
Not even just the value of where he's picked, the way he controls that offense, the throws he makes, the way he uses legs when he needs to. He's a absolute stud. You know, everyone's got this idea of all our quarterbacks have to be Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and I get it. They're a tier one guy. Purdy is not that far behind in the sense of, like, he's that tier two guy where he can win a lot of games for you, you know, regardless. He showed, I get it, he had a ton of weapons, but what good quarterback doesn't? I mean, at the end of the day, I think Patrick Mahomes is one of the only guys that you can say every 3 years, we're going to keep Patrick Mahomes and we're going to revamp the whole team and we'll still be competitive. Josh Allen still struggles with that stuff. You know, when they work on the line or they, you know, the receivers are out of sync or hurt. They all do. So I don't want to take that away from, you know, I think Brock Purdy is a stud of a quarterback. So if JJ McCarthy can give us that to a certain degree, look, what the hell do I know? That's great. We just need someone that can get rid of the ball quick, keep plays alive, and keep us in the game without making a ton of mistakes. And it's hard to find those quarterbacks nowadays.
But the thing is, like, Brock Purdy was in college for 5 years, and he was like not good at throwing the ball to other players who were wearing Iowa State Cyclones uniforms. And I, like, you guys may be aware of Canadian pop sensation from the early 2000s, Avril Lavigne. You've heard of this woman. Yeah.
I was the skater boy. Just
you were. She said, see you later, boys. So There's this conspiracy theory that Avril Lavigne, sometime around like 2010, died or was killed and was replaced by a body double named Melissa. And that's why her face looks different now and she sounds kind of different and she's making different music. I think that happened to Brock Purdy because it is unfathomable to me that this is the same guy that we watched at Iowa State. He was, there's a clip of him playing against TCU where he's getting tackled. He throws a pick six. He throws the ball backwards. Like it may have been recorded as a fumble because he threw it directly opposite the direction of play. How is it the same guy? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't compute.
Whatever it is, he figured it out. That's all that really matters. I mean, if you look at Joe Montana's stats for the first 3 years of his career, not great. If you look at, you know, Eli Manning's stats the first 2 years, Peyton Manning for that matter, they weren't great. This kid's done a lot in a really short amount of time. And I get it. Great offensive line, good weapons. So he's not doing it by himself, but he's also not blowing it either. And if you ask any one of those guys that are super critical of everyone else that actually play for him, they love him, which is hard to get. Like you get George Kittles and those guys to back you up and say, you know, Debo to back you up and say, he's our guy. He is not a game manager. He's just a winner. That's a lot, you know? I think the kid is highly underrated. So I don't care when he figured it out, but he figured something out. That doesn't mean he's going to be that way his whole career. Like, who knows what happens. But as of right now, the kid's highly underrated.
For sure. Glenn, what do the Bills need to do to get over the hump?
That's a good question because I don't even know what the defense is going to look like next year. They have so many free agents.
Yeah.
So, and we're like, I think, 50 mil over the salary cap. So, we're in trouble. I think we need a lot of restructuring by, you know, I'm sure Josh Allen will do it. No problem. We're going to need some other guys to get on board with restructuring so we can do something here. And if we lose Gabe Davis, we're going to need to find a number two for Diggs. But the defense has me scared because a lot of guys are, I mean, it's just amazing how many free agents on that side of the ball we have. I think we only have two on offense, two or three, but I think we have 11 on the defensive side. So I just need to see what this team looks like in a month or two when free agency is in full swing. What I needed right there was a kicker, right? I mean, look, even if Bass makes a kick, chances are Kansas City only has to move the ball 40 yards with 2 minutes left. They're going to do it. But you never know. There could be a turnover. You don't know how that game's going to end. But your kicker went 2 for 5 in the playoffs. That's just not acceptable, paying him $20 million over how many years. I mean, you got it. It's just, I mean, you need a quarterback, you need an offensive line, you need a kicker. I mean, it's just that simple. If you don't have a kicker, they just lose too many games for you.
Yeah, it was like, as someone who grew up an avid fan of Tom Brady, I get really tired of, and we've been doing it for years. You know, the second Tom Brady got into the is he the greatest of all time conversation, it was, oh, well, you got to look at, you know, the career stats of Manning and Breeze. Oh, well, you got to look at, you know, oh, Tom Brady might be a great winner, but if I were starting a team, I would start my team with Aaron Rodgers. And then Brady goes out and wins 3 more Super Bowls. And it's, oh, well, you know, no one's ever been as good as Patrick Mahomes, and I'm tired of it. So I was really rooting for the Bills to unseat the Chiefs there. So I think I felt you a little bit on that one. Like, what is, it's been, you know, this is the first time in almost 20 years that we had a team, or in 20 years that we've had a team repeat as Super Bowl champions. Craig, I don't think either of us expects that the Giants will be the team that prevents the Chiefs from the three-peat, but like, do you even see the dynamics coming together in the league that someone's going to put together a team that can beat them in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Like, I thought the Ravens were built to do it and they came out, you know, their offense was so flat. Like, what has to come together to make this happen?
I mean, I still think the 49ers are a better all-around team. Look, the Kansas City D-backs played phenomenal. Kelce obviously probably didn't have the best game of his career, but he was there when they needed him most. Patrick Mahomes. Like, I get it, but I would still, if you were giving me one of those two teams to say, if we kept them in totally intact, who's going to win next year? I'd still take the 49ers off. Like, they're just a more complete team. I think losing Greenlaw the way he did with the Achilles, just freak accident, that really hurt him. They had a couple injuries on the offensive line when they needed them the most. That really hurt him. Unfortunately, Moody, the kicker from Michigan, he made some big kicks, 50-plus, but you can't miss that extra point. It's just there definitely will be a team. I don't know who it's going to be yet, but I don't think they're unbeatable by any means. You know, at some point, you know, there'll be an injury or two for KC that they just won't be able to get over that hurdle. If the defense just kept hitting them like they were doing, they're a couple plays away from winning that thing. So I give them credit. They're unbelievable. And I'm not a KC fan by any ways. Certainly, to be honest, it's much like the Patriots, where I'm at the point where I'm just sick of them. So I was hoping for anybody else to win. But it'll happen. It'll happen this year. They're not going to repeat again.
Casey's a coach, too. I mean, that's just a well-coached team. Andy Reid's a great coach. And if you're Shanahan, how do you not – you're going out for the coin tip and overtime, like, hey, guy, grab him by the shoulder pads. The rules are different. If we win this toss, we are kicking. We don't want the ball first. Why they took the ball, and you give Patrick Mahomes knows what he has to do to win or tie the game, I just don't understand. You want – that's a huge advantage, knowing if you have four downs or if you only have three. You got to take the points.
I do think the defense had a piece of that. And I'm just total speculating here, but I think the defense was so tired. I don't think they wanted to put the defense right back on the field again. That's just me thinking of if I was a coach. That defense was huffing and puffing the last series. To throw them back out again right away without any kind of break, it was almost a guaranteed touchdown. I'm hoping that's really the only thing that they were thinking. KC was surprised, obviously. Mahomes running to the sideline. I can't believe they did that. You know, like, they're going for it. Whatever. I think at some point they were just like, man, we got to stop the bleeding. This team needs a breather. But that's the only thing I can think of. But the fact that some of the players were saying that they weren't up to date on the rules, and KC's team is saying basically they had individual groups with strategy session just on what overtime was going to look like in the playoffs and the Super Bowl and what would happen and how this would play out and blah, blah, blah. They were so well prepared. So love them or hate them, they were the better team.
Hate them.
Yeah. Hate them. Now, we'll see what happens. Brady went out and won three championships by the time he was 28, and then it was 10 years until the next one. So I guess we'll find out who the Eli Manning to Patrick Mahomes' Tom Brady is here in the coming years or something like that.
I do think Mahomes, more than anybody else, is geared to break all those records. I mean, he's still in such prime condition, right? Like, what is he, 27, 28? Like, he's got so much left in him. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, man, it sure will. All right, as we start to get things wrapped up here so I can go watch the number one University of Connecticut Huskies play at Creighton. Talk about a team primed to repeat for a championship, huh? Any parting shots? I'll start with you, Glenn, as we get this return episode of the One Clip Short podcast wrapped up here.
All I got to say is, like you guys, it was good to see Zalatoris back on the golf course. He's a heck of a player, and I like watching him play.
For sure. Craig, what about you? Where should people be paying attention? What do you got?
I'm excited to see Glenn's 68, I'll say.
I'm me drinking too. All that night.
There you go.
All I'm drinking, since it's on you.
All right. So as we get wrapped up here, people can keep up with everything going on with One Club Short at oneclubshort.com. Follow us on Instagram, where we're at One Club Short. On YouTube, where we're at One Club Short Pod. On Twitter, where we're at One Club Short and then number one, and have been a little bit more active lately. Podcast is available in addition to on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. You get video if you're a listener on Spotify. We will be back. I'm not going to promise next week, but more regularly than we've been around recently as we get into the swing of the golf season here. And until then, thanks everyone for listening.
See ya.